probably double check.
We all set? Is the recording on?
I think so.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. I'm going to call the meeting to order. The Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board. I know it's early in the morning and it's great. We really appreciate all your participation today. So we're just going to go ahead and get on with the meeting, and I'm going to ask Stephanie to do the roll call.
Joyce Still?
Here.
Phil Krein?
Here.
Deb Rouch? Mike Smith?
Here.
Sue Suter?
Here. Okay, citizen participation. If you would come and just give your name. We don't have to do addresses anymore. But if you'd come and give your name, and if you're with any organization.
My name is Vicki Nicewander. I live in Mahomet. Sorry for giving an address, but I am in Champaign County. We've lived in Champaign County for more than 25 years. I have a daughter with a disability, and she currently has a micro board and receives services from her micro board. And I'm the director of the Illinois Association of Micro Boards and Cooperatives. That's a statewide grant in Illinois. For the last 27 years since we've lived in Champaign County, Developmental Services Center has been the really only provider in the county, in Illinois, in this county. And by virtue of the fact that they are so big and prevalent in the county, they have been, as other providers around the state, are able to do pick and choose who they serve. And so if they're unwilling or unable to serve Champaign County residents who have challenges, then I would encourage the DD board to consider funding other agencies who will serve those people. Because we have a wide variety of needs in our county, people who need services who are unable to get them because we just don't have the number and the variety of providers here in our county that we need to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. More participation?
Good morning.
Hi, Dave.
Gonna change gears for a second here. I'd like to ask the CCDB board to take a moment to recognize the passing of Deb Curtin. I don't know if a lot of you know that, but Deb passed away last Sunday after courageously battling her cancer. Deb was a great person and an outstanding advocate, not only for her own children, but for all individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. I think many of you know that she attended many of these meetings and was very, very involved, and particularly with the group in Mahomet requesting services. And we've been working with her to establish, for the last couple of years, to establish a home, which we hope in the next 60 to 90 days when we can get it staffed for four individuals, of which two will be her children. She was a great advocate, was very involved in the assisting and getting, so now hundreds of people with insulin needs can get served in homes, and that'll happen as a result of her working with us to get legislation passed, so that'll happen. It won't help her children, but it'll help others. Anyway, she left us way too soon. She'll be missed, and I'd like to ask this board to have a moment of silence in recognition of her passing. Thank you. I'd like to now introduce Jim Smith. Jim is the chair of the DSE board. He has a statement he'd like to read.
Good morning. My name's Jim Smith. I am the chair of the DSC Board of Directors. Several of our board members have joined me in the audience today. On behalf of the DSC Board management team and all the staff that support individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities at DSC, I am summarizing our position in an effort to demonstrate the level of thought, consideration that went into the difficult decision to not provide services to an individual that we have all at one time or another advocated for. Ultimately, after an extremely thorough review of the needs presented by Jimmy and his family, DSC came to the difficult realization that we could not meet the family's expectations and that we could not safely serve Jimmy. Additionally, there's potential physical implications given the amount of the award for one individual if the state was forced to delay payments, as we have experienced repeatedly and inevitably in this new fiscal year. The family's expectations, the safety of the individual, the safety of the staff that would have supported him, and the physical vulnerability of the state funding all contributed to the decision by DSC's board to renounce services, a position that was not taken lightly by anyone involved. It's noteworthy to share that more than half of the board members and parents or relatives of individuals with ID and DD, myself included. We are not immune to the hardships placed on the families and have firsthand experience. So, of course, this decision was not made lightly. DSC prides itself on serving individuals with varying levels of support needs, and this was an extremely difficult decision, yet the only responsible decision to be made. I want to touch specifically on the safety considerations as well as the fiscal vulnerability referenced above. DSC initially proposed a 2-to-1 staff support in a one-person CILA to introduce Jimmy to a new environment and help to establish relationships with people that would be working with him. Given the impulsive and physical aggression that was described in great detail by Ms. Creighton, and also included in the referral information received by his previous out-of-state residential provider, the state was willing to provide an initial 2-to-1 staff support. As the process unfolded, we became increasingly concerned about our ability to provide the appropriate staffing level for him and also recognized that there was no backup system in place if the circumstances weren't in his best interest, safety, and welfare. The state's current discharge and appeal process can make it impossible to seek other options despite evidence of physical aggression toward other individuals, lack of appropriate staff support, need for more supportive living environment, to name a few. The process is long and tedious, leaving individuals and providers stuck in a holding pattern that is more than difficult for all involved. Concern mounted in our ability to ensure Jimmy's safety, as well as the safety of those that would be responsible to support him. Our fiscal vulnerability, when we were working with the state to weigh our ability to serve Jimmy, staff talked extensively with DHS, who was extremely supportive of the family and instrumental in approving CILA funding following his return home to his family in Illinois. In fact, the financial level of support that they were willing to provide was unprecedented in our area, so much so that the DSC board considered it to have a potential grave negative impact on our agency's ability to maintain services for others currently being served if the state couldn't pay its bills. DSC does have a history of supporting individuals with significant behavioral concerns or challenges. We have been fortunate to draw on the experience of senior staff, consult with psychiatrists, psychologists, the state, the SS team. Ms. Creighton referenced in the last CCDDB meeting and having seen both success and failure given all those resources. The state recognized CILA homes with an expertise for specialized behavioral supports as a gap in a service across the state. As a result, 4 specialized homes are being developed to begin to meet this need. It's a start. While this cannot happen soon enough to meet this family's immediate need, it is our understanding that a provider who does have experience in this area has offered a CILA placement. I would encourage all concerned parties to focus on that successful placement rather than continuing efforts to force a provider to accept a situation that is destined to fail. DSC has repeatedly experienced the negative scrutiny each time the family has had a bad experience with another provider, or their personal circumstances become a crisis situation, and you are approached to intervene. In closing, I bring it back to my initial statements. After an extremely thorough review of the needs presented by Jimmy and his family, DSC came to the difficult realization that we could not meet this family's expectations and that we could not safely serve Jimmy. I have to ask you why, when you have a provider telling you that they cannot safely serve an individual, would you attempt to force them to do so? I also ask that the CCDB, as a board, recognize and respect the decision made by another board. You know what it's like to make an unpopular, difficult decision, hearing the upset, outrage, and discontent of the others for your unpopular decision doesn't mean that you change your decision. It means that the outcome of your decision is more difficult and more painful. We really do understand and that this has been difficult for all involved. DSC has always recognized that it is not and cannot be all for all. We do great things every day, and we provide services and supports to many individuals and families ranging from birth through the lifespan with a wide array of unique abilities and needs. We are very good at what we do, and we take great pride in that, but we also recognize our limitations and ask that you do the same. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. I just have a couple of questions. One is, a comment. What we'll talk about further on in the meeting is we're looking at somebody that can help the Crichtons navigate the system. And the reason we're looking at that is because we don't think there's any one answer. We think somebody has to be there for the family to help put all the pieces together, the community pieces, the state pieces. So we understand that it's more complex than one agency, and we'll talk about that. We also, one of the things I'm looking forward to when we look at a person to help the Crichtons navigate the system is they're going to look at the gaps in services for the whole community. And not just that family, but we know there are some other families who have some of the same issues in the community. So we're anxious to look at that and the recommendations on how we might be able to fill that gap in the whole community, all of us working together. I appreciate this because I think DSC board members, you're in a unique position as board members and expertise, and also, as you said, parents, and either Jim or Dale or whomever, but if you had your druthers in reviewing this particular case, and we don't have to just keep it to this case, but if you had your druthers, what do you see as a partner in the community and knowledgeable about what the gaps are? You've mentioned a couple of them. A backup system, some of the state policies. But if you had your druthers, what would make it easier for you to be just part of a care system, for an example of the Crichton's family, if you had your druthers?
Well, I don't think it's druthers. I think it's the key issue. I think I remember about a year ago we got together when we were talking about the RFP for the home, and the thing that there are other, by the way, there continues to be other providers. There's a lot of other local providers. IAG is now a local provider. We brought in, they're doing that. Dennis sits back there all the time and hears he's not a provider, and he's been here for years and years. Residential Developers is also another provider. So you do have multiple providers, particularly of residential services in Champaign County. I will repeat, and I was going to say this later in agency, the key thing is to be able to staff. We have right now, in my 36 plus years, we've never had such a crisis in staffing. And if you go and ask Dennis, if you ask residential developers, IAG, I'm sure if you ask any of them, for the past 4 weeks alone, we've had 25 shifts that we've had to have people working double time in our group homes just to keep our homes currently, to keep our current residents safe. We have no place to pull people from to serve people in other areas. We got people dropping off here and there because they're just working double shifts, hours. We have one staff person, at least one staff person that worked 3,000 hours last year, and I'm talking about in a group home setting. 3,000, because, and we've tried very creative ways. I'm paying higher than the other local providers. Our benefit package is higher. So it's not just that. There's not available workers out there. And when you do find those workers, it takes significant training because you can't just put them right in. You have to have the training. Besides the direct service employees, there's also a significant, there's no surprise about it, nursing shortage, both in LPNs and RNs. The home that we're trying to open, Mahomet, is going to require us to have 3 full-time LPNs. We have 1 for sure, 1 maybe, and we're still looking, and we've been doing that. RNs, we're at risk all the time when a person leaves because then we can't safely pass medications. So there is a staffing shortage. It's a rate, it goes back to rates. It's something beyond you as far as financially being able to deal with that. We have to work together to go after the state and to continue to change that rate situation in some cases. But other than the most, as importantly though, is also having qualified trained individuals and the expertise in some individuals. There takes more training and more expertise to serve some of those people. So we all believe in serving people in their local community, but the expertise and those resources have to be brought together to do that. So I go back to staffing and to be able to safely keep people served. And until you can do that, you can't put people at risk.
Okay, thanks, Dale. I think, another thing that we're interested in when we look at the, for lack of a better word, the navigator that's going to help the Crichton family, they're going to be able to help make the case of the rate case, the staffing case. They're going to come to us with recommendations on a community level. So you'll all be working with that person, and then they're going to help, they'll be able to help us make the case with the state for these complex families.
Isn't that the PASS agent's responsibility? I mean, when I look at that, but that is by mandate and by law, and with this is a state-funded issue, it's already there. It seems like that's the PASS agent's responsibility to be doing that. Am I correct?
Yes, and they'll be working with the PASS agency. I think, I'll open this up to the whole board. This is just from my perspective. I just want to see somebody who can sort of put this all together with the family and be able to sort some of this out, whether it's the state, the PASS agency, IAG, DSC, and sort that all out so we know what the pieces are going to look like. And obviously that's up to the individual and the family, but that's also going to help us as a board on a community level look at where the gaps in services are and some of the other pieces we need to put together in the community. I don't think that the board, we need to take on individual cases. We know that. We know that this is a unique situation, and I think we have the resources with all of us in the community to be able to sort this out. And I'm the first to say I don't know what the answer is.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And I'll open this up to other comments. Yeah, okay. We'll finish participation. Any board members while Dale was up there? Come on, more public participation.
Hi, thank you. I'm Cindy Creighton. I am the mother of Jimmy Creighton. And, excuse me a minute. Didn't know I was going to have company here. I just kind of wanted to touch base on what Dale and the other gentleman spoke about. First of all, the one thing that I want to emphasize is that I think that, and I think many people feel that, the Champaign 11, our advocating efforts are not to be viewed as just some vendetta against DSC. The issue at stake is that DSC truly has not been providing services to the behaviorally challenged spectrum of people with disabilities. And that is a problem. And I understand what Dale is saying, that there are staffing issues and that there are other agencies who do serve people with behavioral challenges. But the problem is they are our local provider. If IAG and other agencies are willing to take other individuals with behavioral challenges, they had a means to have the supports to learn how to do so. And again, I emphasize the state of Illinois has the state support services team. As Dale mentioned, there are psychiatry people. You know, you have your psychologist, your certified behavioral analyst, specialist, psychologist, social workers. all of these people would be involved in assisting agencies. That's what this team does. They go out into the agencies and they assist the agencies in developing personalized person-centered plans to assist them in serving the needs of these people with behavioral challenges. They should not be secluded just because they're a little bit more difficult to deal with. I mean, all of these other companies, they have to hire staff. And why is it that many of these other companies are still at least making the attempt to serve these people rather than just saying no? And I also would like to emphasize that it was told to us, perhaps I'm wrong, but during the time that the state did approach DSC, there was a concern for expedited payment. But we were told that that was an issue that was going to be worked out. And, you know, I'm not going to sit and waste the board's time or anyone else's time discussing that. But the bottom line is it is possible to serve people with behavioral challenges. And it should not be a reason to hinder an agency's ability to do so just because that's a type of disability that they have. And, you know, I had a conversation with the State Support Services team just a few days ago. And the one thing that I discussed with them was, you know, there are so many people being put into the SODC facilities because there's a fear in serving people. And, you know, the one thing that they stated to me, they said, Cindy, you know, we were involved with residential developers whenever Jimmy was there and they were experiencing difficulty. RD doesn't have a lot of experience serving the behaviorally challenged population. But they said, you know, never, ever once has it ever crossed our mind that Jimmy should ever be in an SODC, because we believe and we know that he can be successful in a group home with the right supports and services. And it's, you know, it's a shame that people don't want to put forth the extra effort. It is going to take extra effort. But I sent an email recently about collaboration and what I believe the importance of that is. We do have the resources within our community and at the state level with all of the psychiatry people, the expertise that each one of our service provider agencies contains to come together as a team to serve these people who they're saying it's too difficult. It's just not appropriate. And again, I emphasize our group's mission was not to destroy DSC or say that they're not doing some good things. But the true reality is they have not been doing anything new with all of the money they've been receiving. And while they have been doing good things, everyone needs help. And it should not be limited to those who are maybe a little more difficult to serve. And every agency has difficulty hiring staff. IAG is not able to take Jimmy right now. It's not a possibility. You know, we have checked with other providers, unfortunately, even out of our local area. They don't have openings. And again, it's not where we wish for Jimmy to be, and it's not where Jimmy wishes to be. So while I respect DSC as an organization, I still believe that we cannot continue to utilize the excuse that behaviorally challenged people are too difficult. And we cannot continue to utilize the excuse that, you know, we just don't have the supports available to do it when we have a whole team of people within the community who would be willing to step up. I can assure you that the psychiatry staff, even within Carl Clinic, would be more than help or more than willing to step up and assist in the process, not just for Jimmy, but for many people. I would even be more than willing to assist in that process and making those contacts and assisting in trying to get meetings with everyone involved. So thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. Thanks, Jimmy. Okay, more public participation?
Hi, my name's Laura Bennett. I'm the Director of Developmental Training at DSC. I really wasn't planning on speaking, but I would like to set the record straight and let people know that we at DSC do work with people who are behaviorally challenged. And I personally have had my hair pulled, I have been kicked, I have been spit upon, I have been punched throughout my 25 years We have, in my program alone, at least 20 people who have these challenges. Of the 150, these 20 people have these challenges on a weekly basis. And I think the issue is that we are trying to safely serve those individuals and meet the needs of the other individuals who are experiencing aging, issues of aging, as well as mobility challenges, and do that in a way that also incorporates community involvement in ratios that might not be ideal. But I do want to set the record straight and let people know that we do work with people with significant behavioral challenges. And in this particular situation, determined that the level of support required would not be what we could provide, and that senior level individuals who also have responsibilities to manage our program would need to have the expertise to support this particular person. But I'm unsure of where people are getting their information that we do not serve people with behavioral challenges. It may be that you're not aware of those people because they do not have strong advocates, but they exist. We serve them every day, and I have the scars to prove it. So my concern has always been to preserve the supports and services for the people we are currently serving, and to try to teach better coping skills to those people who are having those challenges. So I am sorry, I'm not prepared, but I just need to get it on the record that we do, and we have for 25 years or more. And I will end.
Thanks, Laura. If we can briefly, and then we're going to move on.
There is one more thing that I would like to share with the board, as well as the community members here. You know, I think thus far we probably concentrated on all of Jimmy's negative areas and what our family is dealing with. But I would like to mention just briefly some positive notes about Jimmy. Jimmy has been employed with Rural King and Rantoul now for a year. He oversees the carts. He has been extremely successful in this position. The general manager has made comments about how wonderful a job Jimmy does, and he has had a personal assistant when he was in the residential developer's home in Rantoul. He was successful with her as his assistant in this job. Obviously, since he has come home since January, I have been acting in that capacity. He has been successful. So I just wanted to mention that to prove that it is all about person-centered planning and person-centered day programming. They can be successful. And, you know, just because people have aggression doesn't mean that they're aggression 24/7. They're not. Jimmy is not aggressive 24/7. It's an issue. You know, generally we're going to see it at nighttime or when his meds are low. Yes, some of it can be intermittent, but it doesn't mean that they can't be successful. He has been totally successful in this job for over a year, and he's very happy because he is integrated in the community, and he's very happy about it. And there are precautions and preventions that you can take to assist him in being successful. Thank you.
Thanks, Cindy. More participation? Any more comments? Okay, we'll move on. And then if the board has any comments. The next thing on our agenda are minutes from the June meeting. Since this meeting is not a regular meeting, we're going to save and vote on those at our regular July meeting. But they're in the minutes for informational purposes. President's comments. The only thing I would say is I think you all have identified some gaps in services that we've talked about before, but clearly are an issue in the community. And I would really like us to look at how, as a community, we can address these issues rather than any criticism of any particular agency. If we could move on to look at what we can all do together to address these issues. I think the person that's going to work with the Crichton family and the Crichtons, I think that person is going to be able to help us and identify some of these gaps. She'll certainly be talking with all of you from your perspective and your expertise and your experience. And I just am looking forward to that as a board, because I think we're going to learn a little bit about some of these gaps that we need to look at in services. And it could be any agency would be available to fill those gaps. But I'm looking forward to seeing and learning more about what kind of gaps are in the community that we need to look at. I will turn it over for Peter's director's remarks.
The only thing I wanted to mention, I first agree with the comments that have been made about the abysmal situation that we have in Illinois at this time. I was looking through in the board packet. There is the introduction or the Transition to Independence Act, and it basically is an enhancement to Medicaid where 10 states that are doing well in moving people out of segregated centers into integrated living arrangements and so forth. We'll get bonus money from the feds to do this. And I was thinking, we don't have a chance here in Illinois, given our situation. Anyway, that's the only comment that I have at this point. There was mention about PASS and this the this being the responsibility related to Jimmy, that PASS would have a responsibility. I think everybody knows that PASS has more responsibilities than they get funded for, and I think they're still closed down right now, too, aren't they?
They
okay. Anyway, they, of course, are the same abysmal funding issues have plagued them as well. Thank you.
Joyce.
I'd just like to say that PASS doesn't get the money they need for all the responsibilities that they have. And I'd like to make a comparison to Developmental Services Center, who also does not get the money they need in order to serve all the people they need to serve. And I think that we need to respect providers and listen to what they have to say. So all I'm doing is just comparing that to PASS and saying that I believe that if we fund people to provide things, we can't ask them to provide something they don't feel they can provide. If we gave money to other entities, what would those entities be? I mean, we are between a rock and a hard place in Illinois, and we all have to understand that that's the case. So when we ask providers to do things that they feel they can't do safely, we need to listen to them.
I want to take that in a slightly different direction. Certainly that's true. We have limited resources, and we have to respect decisions that people are making. At the same time, I think we really have to turn ourselves around and say, you know, how can we improve services? How can we serve more people? How can we address these difficult cases? You know, because we end up in these things that are almost like finger pointing. And we need a team, and we need to get together, and we need to figure out what the gaps are. And granted, one of the gaps is clearly funding. I think there are others, and I think there are others we can probably do things about. And I think there are other resources in our community we can tap into. So, you know, I really would like to be able to turn some of the conversations around and say, you know, not what's the problem, why can we not serve any particular person, but rather how can we serve them? How can we make this happen? You know, we need to set our sights higher.
Thanks, Phil. Okay, next is agency information. Anybody here from agencies have updates?
I too was not going to plan on talking, but since you opened the floor to that, because so many people are wondering what's going on with the autism program, we are operating on some carryover slushy pile of money. We are open to the public from 10 to 3 right now, our reduced hours. I am currently a half-time employee and will stay that way until the budget crisis is resolved. So we're cutting back on our trainings because that's, I usually do about 30 of those a year, and that's where I'm going to cut some of my time. But as far as the public goes, right now we're open 10 to 3. We are going to be able to run our student internship program, and we'll be back to our regular hours with our 100 hours a week of free student help come September. So just wanted to let people know we're going to be at the farmer's market here to get a little bit of public, let the public know again that we are still open and trying to operate to the best of our ability. Thanks.
Thanks, Linda.
Jennifer Knapp from Community Choices. Just wanted to share a quick story. I know you guys are dealing with a lot of heavy things, so just want to share an exciting story that's happened. For several years, you funded the Community Living Program, which is where we help people to move out. And one of the people who had done that had been living with three friends, and he actually received home-based funding, and we were able to, because of the support, help make the case that he needed it. He's now moved into his own apartment, but the most exciting thing is it was his birthday yesterday, and the people that he most wanted were his old roommates and some of the people from his old neighborhood. And so just want to say that he is moving forward, and he is somebody who has his own transportation business, and a lot of that is because of the support you've provided. So just want to say thanks.
Thank you, Jen. Any other agency updates? Okay, we're moving on to new business. Peter, I think you mentioned in our packet that we have the transition piece of the legislation.
Yeah, to independence.
Yeah, transition to independence. Is there anything more you wanted to say on that?
Well, I just think that this is, you know, as I said, it's kind of sad because I don't think that Illinois is going to be in the ballpark here, but it's another example of the push to move away from segregated settings for people with disabilities. We've talked about that before. The need for us to figure out ways to have make sure that people in Champaign County are served in integrated settings is an important thing that we're going to have to do, and we need to work with providers to get there.
Phil.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out something that's in the senator's remarks. You'll notice if you look at them, he actually mentions a couple of personal anecdotes. And I know that some of us do this kind of thing, but clearly to the extent that our families are in senators' offices when they're in town or congressional offices and making that direct personal case, it obviously makes a difference.
Okay, we're moving on to old business, which is an update on the discussion we've just been having. And Peter, I guess you want to give an oral update.
We really haven't had a lot of time, but we've actually accomplished quite a bit. We contacted Equip for Equality and asked them if they knew of someone that has a really good track record of working with very difficult situations and putting together person-centered plans for those kinds of situations. And they recommended a woman whose name is Joelle Ferrar, who has been working with the state of Illinois to transition people out of state-operated facilities, and she was on contract with Equip for Equality, which has just ended recently. We felt it was important that anybody that we were looking at as filling this role had to be somebody that would be acceptable to the family. And someone that the family chose, and so we suggested that they make contact with each other and see whether this was someone that the family wanted to work with, because obviously you can't just force people to work with. That goes against the whole concept of person-centered planning. Turns out they seemed to be a good match, and they had some telephone conversations. And we have been working with Joelle to try to figure out what needs to be in a contract, what would be the deliverables, and we've just begun talking about pricing. Basically where we are at this point is that Joelle feels that there's a need to kind of start all over, to really reassess the case. The rate that the state is willing to pay for Jimmy and Acilla is like $67,000, which is not adequate. Obviously does not cover what his needs are. That's been one of the holdups with IAG. IAG is still in the game. They want to work with Jimmy, and they want to work with this person to put together a person-centered plan. The consultant also feels that part of this needs to be reevaluation. So that would be part of it. As I said, it's going to be kind of to step back and take a fresh look and come up with a plan. At this point, she thinks it's going to take in the neighborhood of about 175 hours plus the consultation that. I think there's a couple consultations. I don't have all the details of this. This is just hot off the press, actually. And preliminarily, the consult will cost us about $15,000, maybe a little more with regard to the transportation that would be involved. And that's pretty much where we are at this point. Lynn, do you have anything to add to that?
Because we've talked a little bit about the role of the PASS agent, we did. Joelle has also met with the two key local people, which are the Sivers facilitator and the PASS agent. And this happened while the PASS agents were not working. And so, you know, because their contracts are with the state, primarily they couldn't work, but then there was a court order allowing them and ordering them to work on Ligas cases. I checked with Equip for Equality. This is classified as a Ligas case. It didn't initially have that name, but it is now. So it's fine for the PASS agent to work on this case even when they go to limited or no hours. They can still work on this one. So that was kind of that was our immediate hurdle. But those introductions have been made, and you know, we're still at the point of getting releases signed and information shared, and this all needs to be really driven by the Creightons. So,
yeah, the other thing I really forgot to mention that would be a deliverable on this would be that this would be involve making a presentation to the state to try to get an appropriate rate, accelerate for Jimmy. That would include everything that he needs, and so that's kind of where we are at this point. Any questions or comments?
Yeah, I do have a question, and I know you're going to get to some of it in a few minutes, but I think you had, you know, one of the things we discussed at our last meeting was the extent to which this activity would give us insight and plans for other kinds of cases. So can you comment on that?
That's one of the items in the contract, would be to look at that. Actually, one of the things, the other, items that you wanted us to pursue was how many other people are in a similar situation. And as you know, at the time when we began researching that, that was right when they were closing down. But we did get some oral feedback from people, and they see that right now there are about two other situations that are similar but not nearly the level of intensity or problems that this case involves.
I want to, excuse me, this Mrs. Farrar, or Ms. Farrar, we would sign a contract with her to provide these services in this particular situation, and will she be the one to give us some additional information that we were just talking about? Is that the source?
Yes.
Okay, so this contract with her, is it a set fee or is it open-ended?
I'm sorry, is it a what?
The set fee, is it $15,000 or is it so much per hour plus expenses?
We're in the process of identifying the pricing. Her hourly fee is $75 an hour. She's estimating it's gonna take roughly 175 hours.
That tells me that if we make a contract with her, it's gonna be on an hourly basis rather than a set fee. That's right. What we're talking about.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Here, this is me being able to take
a look. That's okay. I just wanted to, you know. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying no. I'm saying
no. I understand. Okay. I understand. Didn't understand it.
Well, and I think we'll want to share with the board the deliverables and make sure that it's meeting our expectations as board members do. Okay, any more comments on that? Okay. Budget. There's a decision memo in the packet. As you know, at our June meeting, we didn't vote on next year's budget, so that is on the agenda today. Is there a motion to approve the agenda, then we'll have, or the budget, then we'll have discussion?
Move to approve.
Okay, second. Okay, motion denied. Any other comments on the budget?
I still have some questions that haven't been answered. Whom should I direct those to? Do I send them to you directly? Okay. All right, I'll send you a memo.
Okay. Looks like we want to table the budget until our regular July meeting. Is there a motion to do that?
It's not necessary.
Okay, we don't need a motion. Okay, we're going to defer it.
Nothing.
Okay. We'll take this up. We'll put this on the agenda at the July meeting. That is what I'd like to add for Dale and Jennifer, and I think Patty's here. Also, I'd like to put on the agenda for our July meeting an update on Employment First, the project that both agencies are taking on and starting within this new fiscal year. So why don't we go ahead and put that on the agenda, and then you all can just give us an update on where you are with that. Okay. Phil.
Yeah, and I'd like to add to the agenda for our next meeting a discussion on reopening the intergovernmental agreement with the Mental Health Board. I think we need to take a look at that.
Okay. Put that on the agenda. Any more? Agenda items for next month, or any more comments before we adjourn? Okay, I want to thank again everybody for coming today and your interest in what we're doing in the community. And meeting is adjourned. Thank you.